Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Scrum Down NBC Sports Rugby Podcast. I am your host with the most, Alex Corbicero, and it's great to be back, everyone. Lots to talk about. Premiership rugby is really heating up on the weekends. Another action-packed weekend of games. I really, really call you all to check that out. If you're in America, it's live or on demand with Peacock TV. And there's just so much action across the board. Some real shootouts. You had Bristol Bears squeaking out a win against London Irish 40-36. That one didn't disappoint. They remain undefeated and right near the top of the table. Then you have Saracens also undefeated. They just squeaked by in another close one, 41-39 over Gloucester. And then you had the game of the season so far for me, Sunday, Exeter Chiefs taking on Harlequins, game of two halves. That one finishing 43-42, two Exeter Chiefs, keeps them at the top of the table. Then you had other action across the board, really the two teams that are in financial worries, and that's what we're going to get onto on this pod. Wasps beating Bath in impressive form. And then you had Worcester. This could be the last game for Steve Diamond and his Worcester side as they go out on a high. And then, you know, you had a Midlands derby, which saw Leicester Tigers, you know, had a loss early on. They've got back to impressive ways. They were convincing winners against Saints. Really, the Premiership is heating up. So much to talk about there. The table's going to be another close one. You can just see the writing on the wall. But we need to get into this week's story. This week right now, unfortunately, all the news is with the off-field woes of the Premiership. Worcester Warriors have been suspended from the league. Wasps have financial worries that started to show cracks at the end of the season. And to talk about all of that, we've brought on Alex Lowe from the Times newspaper, rugby correspondent and friend of the pod, to get into it and give us all the latest. So let's crack on. Then here he is, Alex Lowe, lead rugby writer for the Times, friend of the pod. Welcome back on the Scrum Down, mate.
Oh, thanks for having me. Good to be back. If I'm on, it must mean there's been some more bad news floating around the league.
Yeah, unfortunately, we only bring you on when we're not actually talking about the on-field rugby as much, but more the off-field news stories, which is a shame because there's some cracking on-field rugby on the Premiership at the moment. Another exciting weekend. It's really producing fruitful with the actual quality of play. But it is these, you know, news stories, Worcester really being the headline that we brought you on to talk about.
Yeah, you're right. There's a real sense of light and shade, really. The on-field product, as they call it, you know, the rugby has been sensational. I was at Exeter Harlequins on Sunday. Just another remarkable game of rugby. 12 tries, last minute winner. So the rugby is thrilling, but it's all taking place under the cloud of Worcester and Wasps now as well, which I'm sure we'll come to. Today being the darkest day of all, really, Worcester are suspended from the Premiership. They were set an onerous series of tasks, of demands by the RFU, which they never had any hope of reaching, such as the player insurance runs out at midnight Monday tonight. They had no money to pay it. They had to guarantee that the outstanding wages would be paid. They have no money to pay them. they had to present a credible business case for the successful future running of this club. They don't have one. So they were never going to meet that deadline of 5 o'clock today, which has meant suspension from the league, which was swiftly followed by the owners of the club placing the club into administration. So that is what so many people have been calling for a month, 2 months, as the only way to save the club. And the owners held off under increasing pressure from the government, from local members of parliament. Tonight, they are now in administration. So the situation with Worcester is that they are suspended from the league for an indefinite period. I'm told if this is sorted within 3 to 4 weeks, one of those weeks is a bye week, which helps. So let's say they've got a month to sort this out. The league can't really cope with them being suspended for any longer. They're not going to replay the matches they miss. They'll be awarded to the opposition. The league will have to cope with this for 3 to 4 weeks. Any longer than that, it becomes untenable. The integrity of the league gets affected. Already, they're due to play at Gloucester this Saturday. Gloucester are now going to lose about £400,000 from not being able to stage that game. The impact is going to hit beyond just those who live and support the club and those who work for the club. By going into administration, that is seen as the only route out to save the club, because on October the 6th, as I think we spoke about previously, they have a court hearing for an outstanding tax bill of £6 million. That, if they can't pay that, then the club would cease to exist. By putting it into administration, it gives them hope of finding a buyer, because no buyer was going to come in and take on a club with the debts that Worcester had. By putting it into administration, there's an impact on local businesses who are local suppliers to the club, which is really bad. But it does give the club a chance to survive. The downside of that is that the rules in the RFU state that they will be relegated out of the Premiership for next season. They'll drop down to the Championship. Their only hope, the only caveat, is if they can convince the authorities that the predicament they're in was not of their making. They will almost certainly blame the pandemic for it, and the pandemic has been massive across the Premiership. Clubs are struggling enormously, but there have been lots of allegations made by MPs, by creditors, of mismanagement as well. And if that's proven to be the case, then I would suggest, I don't know for certain, I'm not on the panel, but I would suggest it would be hard to blame the pandemic if there's other factors behind it too. So as it stands now, Six Way Stadium is locked. The staff have had to remove their belongings. The players, we don't think, have any insurance, so they can't play. And I think they're going to have to go and train at a local school. If they don't get their money at the end of this month, then they can submit a letter and leave the club within a month. So by the time, if they come back, they could come back with fewer players. We know for sure that other clubs around the Premiership are sitting and waiting, because Worcester are not heavy hitters. They're not one of the big guns, but they've got some British and Irish Lions players on their books. They've got some England players on their books. And that there are clubs who have just about enough space in their budget or in their cap to pick them off. So it could be the turbulent times are not over for Worcester.
It doesn't sound good, mate. And so let's go back a little bit earlier. So, you know, since we last spoke, you know, there'd been calls for administration from MPs, from, you know, O'Toole and the group that were potentially interested in their words, rescuing the club. But it seems like the current ownership group were hell-bent on literally pushing that to the very, very end, almost announcing last week that they'd found a buyer, that they'd had money to put in to go along with the weekend, and then sort of news of that buyer and where it went almost died to a standstill. Do you know too much about what happened in that instance where we were hearing that potentially there was a buyer coming in?
Well, my understanding is that they did have a potential buyer, but the demands that the co-owners were making, the financial demands that they were making were too great, and the deal didn't go anywhere. it was on the table for a while, and they announced that it was going to the lawyers for the final sign off, the heads of terms to be signed. And they felt that would have been 2 weeks ago today, Monday. They felt that they promised it was going to be signed that night, and they promised that funds would be injected into the club within 48 hours to pay the outstanding salaries and to cover the cost of staging their first home game of the season. The takeover never happened. The money never arrived. And Worcester have only managed to stage their two home league games because staff and fans have volunteered to get the games on. And there's been a wonderful community spirit around the place. It's everything in the dark times, it's everything that you want a rugby club to be about. It's about the people pulling together for the good of the team because they love the place and they love the community and they love what it stands for. The sad thing about all of it is it's come in these circumstances where they don't know for sure if their club will ever play a professional game in the Premiership again.
It's just amazing how it got to this point. And that sort of brings me to my next question is, had the owners potentially gone into administration a lot earlier when this first winding up notice from HMRC came in, there was a call from O'Toole, from the MPs, this was weeks ago now, to instigate administration. Could that have allowed the club to get into a better position where there's a chance that they could continue the season, even if they had to miss some games, which they're going to have to miss now anyway?
It would have certainly saved a lot of heartache. And I'm no business expert, but my understanding is that yes, had they gone into administration, there is a consortium led by Jim O'Toole, the former chief executive, who've said from the outset they have the money to fund the club through administration and then bring it out the other side with funds to present a long-term plan for getting the club back on its feet to be as sustainable, really, as any Premiership club can be. Had that happened a month ago, 6 weeks ago, they wouldn't be suspended now. Assuming that everything that we understand and everything we've been told was followed through with, they would have avoided suspension if they had chosen to go to administration, and if Jim O'Toole's consortium had taken charge of it and been approved by the RFU, which they would have to be, then the club wouldn't be suspended right now. He wasn't the only buyer. He's the only one who's gone public with his interest in taking charge of Worcester from administration. But there are other interested parties, we understand. But it needed the club to go into administration for anything to happen. And they've done so, but only after being suspended from the Premiership, which is, frankly, scandalous that it's been allowed to get that far. By the owners, Alex, but also by the authorities around it, who I don't think have acted swiftly enough, harshly enough, to actually force this to happen earlier.
And so that's my next question is you know, potential oversight. You know, obviously Premiership Rugby, it seemed like this came as a shock to everyone. But once you find out a little bit more about what's going on, the cracks and the warning signs were there for a while. And now I see Premiership Rugby, calls for more transparency of finances for everything. Is this the wake-up call that maybe the RFU and Premiership Rugby need? Because it should never really have been allowed to get to this point.
Completely. And it is a wake-up call. Bill Sweeney, the chief executive of the RFU, put out a statement tonight, of which I agree. I agree with most of it. There's one line in it which really grated with me, which is where he said, "Professional rugby is still a relatively young sport." I don't buy that as an excuse for allowing things like this to happen. Rugby turned professional 27 years ago, right? That's plenty of time for the authorities to get the house in order. What happened here was the RFU. The way it works, the RFU have to approve a takeover. They have to approve the owners. The Premiership Rugby don't have that authority, but this is all going to form part of what needs to be a pretty major revolution, frankly, in the governance of the game in England. The RFU need to extend their director's test, which is what they call it. My understanding is they're under pressure to extend it to include like forensic auditing, almost pre-auditing of a business plan to ensure that whoever takes charge of a club can actually follow through on what they promise. this takeover of 2018 promised the world, and it's delivered potentially the end of a club. That has to change. And at the moment, it's the RFU who have that oversight. There's a wider conversation here about the commercial value of the league, all the work that needs to be done to grow that side of it, what the next television deal could look like, what size the league needs to be, the optimum structure of the league, whether it's one division of 12 or 10 or two of eight, or lots of conversations happening, but change is afoot, and it's been driven by this. I think the RFU dropped the ball in allowing this takeover to go through in 2018. They were made, at the very least, they were made fools of by the owners who promised one thing and delivered something very, very different. The Premiership also needs to change its governance model. And this is not what rugby fans always want to talk about, is off-field governance. But effectively, when Premiership Rugby was set up in 1996, it was just to represent the commercial interests of the clubs. But the sport has grown to such an extent, and the investment and the commercial side of the game, the potential is there. It needs to flip to much closer to an NFL model, where decisions can be made more centrally by an executive power on behalf of the clubs, but placing the league's interests first. So all these things are interconnected, and I think this is the catalyst that's made the executives realise that they hadn't got their house in order quickly enough over the last 27 years, and they must do so now. And the key date is 2024-25 season, when the RFU and Premiership Rugby are going to reach, they have to reach a new agreement, a professional game agreement they call it, which effectively is a transaction where the RFU give the clubs funding in return for access to their players. It's a wider agreement than that. It includes lots of other factors, but that's the core of it. And all of these governance changes are going to have to be included in this, because the sport has had a real kick up the backside. It needs to evolve very quickly, and it's not, it can't any longer trot out the line that it's a young sport, a young professional sport, because there are a lot of companies that have started up in the last 27 years. UFC is a $1 billion sporting enterprise that's done pretty well in the last 27 years. So professional rugby at international level, but particularly when you're talking at club level, has got a lot of evolving to do very quickly.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
And if you look at, say, you know, the other teams, will they, the ones that are a bit more financially secure, do you think they'll have pushback from this sort of new form of governance? Do you think they'll buy into it? Because say you're a club now in Premiership Rugby made of 12, 13 stakeholders as such. If one or two drop out of the Premiership, obviously potentially devaluing the sort of the league on a whole. But at the same time, if you're now 1 of 10 or 1 of 11, you're actually sitting in a better position than 1 of 13 or 1 of 14. So, you know, is there enough incentive for those other clubs to want this to happen, or is it going to be a standstill? Because I think people have been calling this for a longer period of time. This is really only the cracks that have been exposed now, which seem to make it almost now in the public domain. You cannot ignore it anymore.
So it's not going to be a smooth process. You're right, Alex. I spoke to a few club owners, a few executives in the last week or so. There are those who feel that the league cannot move at the pace of the slowest club. So if a club is struggling and effectively can't afford to be in the Premiership, their view is they shouldn't be in the Premiership. Get rid of them. Drop them into the league below. Those are the clubs who want a higher salary cap, who want to be pushing the boundaries of what's possible to drive the league forward. That's their view. The opposite view from the clubs with less money, fewer resources, is that the salary cap needs to stay lower and we'll give it 10 years and the commercial side will catch up and then we can all grow together. Those two clearly don't meet in the middle. And I think that's where the new structure could well come in. 10 teams is the number that I'm hearing a lot from a lot of coaches, directors of rugby, executives, as the optimum number. One of the key factors behind that is that if you have 10 teams, you can, that the Premiership can always avoid the international windows, and therefore the England players can be available all the time. We've started this season, it's been brilliant, as we said, but Marcus Smith played his first game of the season on Sunday. And Harlequins have already played, that was their third game. You've got people paying big money now for tickets and the stars aren't always there. And that is to the detriment of the league. So it's to the league's benefit if they can find a solution that allows the England players to play, because that will drive the commercial side.
So say hypothetically now a 10-team format would allow, you know, England players to not miss international windows. Would that then change the leverage the Premiership clubs have on those EPS deals and the money they get for players to be away? Because that seems to be how they get that money in the first place, is to be compensated for those players being away for part of the year.
They're only away, the compensation is not for them to be released to play for England, because the clubs have to release them to play the matches for England that are inside the international window. What the RFU pay for is additional training time for the players, as well as rewarding teams for fielding English qualified players and rewarding them for developing homegrown players. That's why I said about this deal, it's more than just one simple transaction. But it's too... I think we've reached a point where the chief executive, of Premiership Rugby used to work at the RFU, and he gets on, he is aligned in his vision with the chief executive of the RFU. They need a thriving professional league in England to drive interest in the sport and to produce players who will play for England. And what I'm hopeful we're going to get in the next 2 years is the closest deal we've ever had, really, that aligns the demands of the league with the demands of the England team. And I think a smaller league, 10 teams, I think, would be the best solution to help kind of join those two often competing aims together. You'd have fewer teams, so you'd have a slightly smaller concentration of clubs for the best players to play in, fewer clashes, fewer matches, which is critical. I mean, there is a theory that actually it should go to a Premiership A and a Premiership B of 8 teams in each. There'd be even fewer games. But you'd have to be certain then that the commercial side would work, that the less is more theory would work. Certainly with 10 teams, you might get a balance in between. But the players are playing too much rugby. There are too many clashes, too many competing agendas. And the next 2 years in English rugby is critical now. And we've said this for 27 years of professionalism, much of which has been spent with internecine fighting and shooting each other in the foot and shooting themselves in the foot. But it feels to me that both the RFU and the clubs recognise that that this crisis is the opportunity they have to strike a new deal that can suit both parties as well as possible.
It's really interesting because, you know, until this happened, the trajectory was going for expansion, not, you know, declining teams and fitting the schedule. And this, it makes perfect sense to me that the schedule is so crowded. You've got to fit in the teams. They've now even had, you know, bye weeks added as the number goes to 13 and everything. So it draws out the league even more. So to me, it makes sense because it fits much more within the window. But my question is like, it's a big turnaround to go from adding more teams to now chopping in theory four of where you thought you might be.
Yeah, it is a big turnaround, and it's going to be rocky. Only last week, they announced that the promotion criteria that Ealing Trailfinders or whoever finishes top of the championship, which is almost certainly going to be Ealing, would have to meet to come up. And it's a 5,000-seat stadium. In order to join the Premiership, to be a 10,000-seat stadium at the end of the first season, by which time they could be relegated. It's almost a deal set up to fail, but it was also incredibly tone deaf because as this announcement came through about how the Premiership could get up from 13, which is an odd number and should never have happened, to 14, all the conversations happening around the league are about cutting it to 10. Or if you were to expand it to 16, it would be in a Premiership A and a Premiership B, so two divisions of 8. So the conversations are about contracting, and it's going to be rocky and it's going to be tough. Now, Worcester, I suspect, will be in the Championship next season as a punishment for going into administration. So that might help them. Wasps, who I'm sure we'll come on to, they're not in a certain position yet at the moment either. So it could be that those club owners I spoke to who effectively argued for a survival of the fittest, they might end up getting their wish. Because we've got one club in administration suspended. We've got another club who owe investors £35 million. They owe the taxman £2 million. And they've had to file what they call a notice of intention to appoint an administrator because the taxman called in that £2 million. It's given Wasps 20 days to find that money and find a way out. Otherwise, they could end up being in the same boat as Worcester, and the factors behind it are very different. The factors behind Wasps were they were losing money hand over fist when they were based in High Wycombe at the ground of Wycombe Wanderers Football Club. I feel if they'd stayed there for one more year, they'd have gone bust then. They got taken over, they got moved to Coventry. It was really their only option, but it was a massive gamble. And they moved into a huge facility, football soccer-sized stadium with an arena. Harry Styles is playing there. Next summer, Arctic Monkeys, Coventry City play football there. There's a casino on site, a hotel on site, conferencing facilities on site. To fund that, they took out they sold bonds for £35 million. They were due to be repaid in May, and the club couldn't do it. Now, they've been hit really badly by the pandemic because the hotel was shut, the casino was shut. So all of their other revenue streams that have helped to fund the club were also blocked off from earning any money at all. So they had to take the gamble to move, and they've really been undone by the pandemic and the commercial issues around the Premiership. Now they have 20 working days to find a solution, but it's a very different situation to the Worcester one. But they could end up they're already in a very similar position.
So let's transition to Wasps then. So the way it's working with Wasps is they had this £35 million bond. That is outstanding. Plus they have unpaid tax bills on top of that. And, you know, the question to me is, are they in a similar position to Worcester where they can try and blame the pandemic? Or is the fact that the £35 million bond really sort of, you know, does that take them out of blame from the pandemic? And does that make them more accountable? Because they took that decision long before COVID happened. And it's something that, you know, they knew they were having to deal with in the long run regardless.
I think that's exactly the conversation that we'll have to have. If it gets that far, if they go into administration, that's the conversation that will have to happen between the club and the authorities. So, yes, they had this £35 million bond debt hanging over them that they knew they'd have to repay. It was the only way to keep the club alive in 2014, so they could argue that they had to do it then. They would also say, with some justification, that all of their revenue streams were shut down. And I know every club's were shut down, but if you're basing your business model on a casino and a hotel and a rugby club and a football club, and they're all, you can't generate income from any of them, like I said, I'm not an expert and I'm not on the panel, but I think Wasps would have a stronger argument for this being a pandemic in forced situation than Worcester. There's all sorts of issues around the Worcester thing in terms of the company that's gone into administration today, WRFC Trading, is where the club sits. But all the club's assets, the stadium and the land around it, have been moved into other clubs, also owned by the owners, and they haven't gone into administration. So there's the two situations are very different. And the pandemic has been massive in both. And the Wasps one also, there's that bond, which always looked like an ambitious effort, but then they would probably argue it was their only hope of saving the club in the first place.
It's interesting with that bond, because I actually look back and on Twitter, some of the articles were being shared of when they actually took that bond out, and it was, you know, spun in a very positive light of making them one of the richest clubs in Europe, and, you know, financially setting them up for the future. And my question is, you know, pre-pandemic, how well were they doing financially? Were the cracks already there with the hotel and the casino, or was everything humming in that almost 6-year period as such? And then all of a sudden went off a cliff during COVID? Because to me, that's a big question when you're aligning whether or not the pandemic was to blame, is where were they pre-pandemic?
Yeah, they weren't in a great place pre-pandemic either, because they had this enormous debt and they owed money to the owner, who I think has lent them about £18 million. Plus, they had no training ground. I mean, the training ground was a joke. You talk to players, James Haskell and players like that, who'll tell you stories of having to train on a pitch that your local third 15 wouldn't train on, having travellers would come and just pitch camp in the car park and walk in and help themselves to supplements from the jar. I mean, it wasn't a professional training centre, so they had to build a new one, which has been a very expensive project. It's a brilliant training centre now, state of the art, one of the best in the league, but it's been expensive. So it's been a very expensive project, this moving Wasps to Coventry. There's talk, unconfirmed, I haven't managed to track down anyone, but there's talk of investment interest. And if you're looking at that business from the outside, you'd go, like I said earlier, you'd go, you know, 35,000 seat stadium that can host Premier League football if Coventry were to get to the Premier League, can host concerts, can be like a Live Nation type venue. The rugby club would just be a small part of that, I think. If you were to sell the group, it wouldn't be Wasps that would be the attractive element to an outside investor. It was a stretch to do what they did. They did spin it. They did sell it well, and their vision then was genuine. Like they haven't pulled the wool over anyone's eyes. I don't believe. I think their vision was genuine. They believed they could generate a bigger crowd than they have in Coventry. They believed that the other elements of the business would prop up the rugby club, and it would thrive. And various circumstances, not just the pandemic, but you know the failed television deal in the UK. Premiership Rugby under previous leadership made a complete hash of negotiating a new television deal with a British broadcaster, and ended up signing for about the same, if not less, than what they were previously on. You compare that to the French top 14, their deal was a 17% increase. I think the Premiership get about £40 million a year. Compare that to the French deal, which is like 300 million over 4 years. Compare that to Australian rules football, 18 team competition that's played only in Australia, a sport that's played only in Australia, They've just signed a 7-year TV deal worth £2.5 billion. And Premiership Rugby are going at £40 million a year. They made a hash of that. So if that deal had been better, then the knock-on effect would have been less severe for all the clubs.
This probably the next question is, you know, where do the Premiership go to fix this? How so? Obviously, this next TV deal isn't going to come up for a little while. So there's got to be other areas that additional revenue or commercialization of the league can really focus on to try and steer the ship out of these waters.
Yeah, and that's going to be part of these conversations I talked about around the next couple of years. There's no immediate quick fix here. They've got CVC on board, who are there to help try and grow the commercial value of the Premiership. And they're going to do that, I think, by, like, for example, the Premiership and United Rugby Championship and the Six Nations all now sit, they share an office in central London. So there's a lot of collaboration going on. I think they're knocking some heads together. I believe the only way that the league can grow its commercial value and grow the number of fans who actively engage with it on a regular basis. So they're coming up with this number in England that 10 million people identify as a rugby fan in England, and they would all watch England play a big game in the Six Nations. But only around 1 million will engage with the Premiership. What's happening to those other 9 million? A lot of them will be casual sports fans who only want to watch the very best. I totally get that. But there are a lot of people who will identify as a rugby fan who aren't engaged in the Premiership. They've got to answer the question of why that is. And I just one example, there are large areas of this country, as you'll know, Corbs, where there's a huge rugby community and no Premiership club. So they might follow the sport, but they don't have a club to go to. So if and this isn't all about nicking ideas from the NFL, but let's just throw out one idea. If the league agreed that they needed to take action that would benefit the league, even though if it might not be to the individual benefit of each single club, what if you asked Newcastle to take a Premiership game to Brighton? Then you have won the most famous rugby matches of all time when Japan beat South Africa at the World Cup in a county that is a very strong rugby county, but doesn't have a Premiership club on its doorstep. It sort of feels to me similar to the NFL bringing games to London or to Munich or to Mexico. Is it to the benefit of Jacksonville Jaguars to play at Wembley Stadium in London? They're sacrificing a home game, but it grows the overall value and engagement in the league, and that therefore has a wider benefit. I'm not sure if that idea is going to happen, but it's the kind of thinking that they need. Innovative thinking, basically scrap everything you thought was right in the past because it's proven to be wrong. Come to the table with innovative ideas. You know, as someone said, why not double up, go and play a game in Cardiff, a double header with, you could play Ospreys and Cardiff, and then you could play Bristol and Bath at the same day in the Millennium Stadium, 80,000 fans. Why not? If you've got a common shareholder in CVC, maybe it won't work because of TV and sponsorship, but you don't know unless you chuck it on the table and come up with these ideas. And that's where the game has to be. The game has to, and I'm confident, by the way, in the executives who are now in place at Premiership Rugby. They get this. They know all of this. They want to be innovative. They just need to get everyone together to drive the league rather than just try and sell tickets to their own catchment area in Gloucester or just try and drive up the attendance around Manchester for sale. You've got to basically convert those 9 million floating rugby fans into Premiership Rugby fans.
And then here's another area that I've always thought about, just from a cost of Premiership clubs, that they spend a lot of money on building infrastructure, on development from the top down. If you look in the NFL, if you look at other leagues, they're not spending any money on that area. It's through the collegiate system. For me, there's always been the question, should the RFU just take over the academy system and all of that development as they're benefiting from it and then allow the Premiership just to sit above and reap the rewards of that and wipe a lot of costs from their books, because right now they're all losing money. It doesn't actually make sense to me to keep spending money on that. It's really more the RFU that benefit from that. They get 200,000, I believe, or so from the RFU to run these academies, but most clubs are pouring way more into their budget. I know some clubs as high as 800,000 plus. So for me, you know, is that somewhere that can be part of the business plan that shifted? Because right now they're just hemorrhaging cash everywhere.
Great idea. And that's exactly the kind of thinking that I think is now needed. And I know for a fact that, you know, for example, Premiership clubs run community programs. The RFU also run community programs. So why not join forces and run one community program that, you know, we know the Premiership clubs will run a community program to try and generate fans to come and buy tickets. But there's nothing wrong with that joining forces with the RFU's community program to drive more people to play the game. The two things can serve the same,
yeah,
the same purpose, and save money and stop duplicating. And your idea there, it would take a shift. It would be radical, but radical is what we need. Yeah, you bring all the development under one roof, and then and the pathways aren't necessarily attached to any club. Then you have a draft system or a recruitment,
yeah,
drive, you know, your recruitment
exactly
day.
That's exactly how I see it.
They can go and pluck, you know, a club, because all these clubs have depth charts. They know the positions they're going to need in 2, 3, 4 years' time, because they know who's coming through. They know who's on their books. So you can then work to ensure that across the league you've got the spread of talent in the right places. Now, all of this removes the individual, like Leicester Tigers or Gloucester, working as their own individual business. It makes them more reliant on a wider program, part of something bigger and a league. Whereas at the moment, the setup is they stand alone and then they play in the league. It needs to flip.
Yeah.
It needs to be driven by the league. But I know that, for example, that community conversation, that is happening already.
I think collaboration here is the hybriding their models together. And you know, I'll get off my little uni pipe dream in a second, but the way I've always seen it is, say you have 10 to 12 academies, RFU centers of excellence built into universities or whatever, you all of a sudden, you create your own factory. You're actually having, you know, allowing more coaches to work and coach and develop coaches along the way. You're all synergizing up through the 20s off of that. You've got a draft above it, but you also create a whole new property which could potentially be commercialized. If you have the best of the best talent up to under 21s or under 23s in a university league, I think that's commercialable and marketable that then actually grows, because right now, all these clubs are developing all these players, but there's no commercial rights around the A-League. There's no TV deal around the A-League. The Prem Cup barely gets watched. Why would you not look at college football in America as like a template or something to follow? It's like, this could actually make money and cover the costs of the development long-term if it's sort of done right.
Yeah, the Premiership Cups are just a great example of something that isn't working, and it's actually to the detriment of players in the league. The Premiership Cup is supposed to be a development competition, but clubs now, because of the lower salary cap and because of the pandemic, they don't have enough players to be able to play it. So they're having to go to universities or championship clubs to borrow players for midweek fixtures. And Worcester, who have their own problems, only just managed to fulfil a fixture last week. They couldn't name a full 23-man squad, and they had to bring two people out of retirement. One, a 41-year-old coach who hadn't played for 9 years, had to come sit on the bench. And the other, Matt Gilbert, former England deaf international who'd played in the Premiership, he'd retired the year earlier to run a pizza business. They were just, you know, what's the point? What's the point in having a competition?
Yeah.
A club competition, if the clubs don't have the players for it. Don't run it. Turn it into something much more valuable. Release them from playing for
the club. I agree, because
and represent, or do it regionally and make it a regional under 23 comp. Just everything that is currently written down needs to be ripped up, and it might come back. It might still be the right answer, but you'd end up back there having considered it in a whole new light. And all these ideas that you discuss there, universities, changing the whole academy structure, that is part of what has to happen. And I think they've got 2 years to do it.
Because I think it benefits RFU long term anyway, because if someone has been through the academy system, like every team only has, you know, say you have Maratoji in your academy, Nick Azikwa coming through just below, you stop looking at second rows or hiring those spaces, you know what I mean? And there might be two or three guys that would have got into another academy somewhere and had the chance to be developed who just don't go, because it's always been Premiership rugby clubs are building the academy to serve their needs at the top, but their needs don't quite always line up with the RFU's needs, and synergizing that has always made sense to me. But I feel like, you know, I'm getting lost on this topic a little bit. So these are sort of the last questions I wanted to hit you with is, say Worcester can't find their way out of this administration and have a plan to continue in the Premiership, or it just needs more time or whatever. What is going to happen to some of the results they've already had? So say London Irish get a 5-point win in the opening week. Does that win stand, or are those points going to get taken away if Worcester reap out? Because I've had people from London Irish actually ask me that question, because they're wondering the same thing at the moment.
Yeah, well, we don't have a firm answer on that. It would have to go to a panel. My sense is that if Worcester don't play another game, then they've only played three and they won one and they lost two, that all those points would just have to be scrubbed. So it would be good for Newcastle, who went to Six Ways and lost heavily at the weekend. They would actually not have lost out, and it'd be bad for the other two who beat them. But I don't see any other alternative. You can't then go through the league and do what they did, what they had to do in the pandemic, and when a game was called off, just award a team a 5-point win. You can't just award everyone else bonus point wins for the rest of the season. And that's why I'm told that they've really got 3 or 4 weeks, because if it gets to having to award these victories beyond their bye week, then the integrity of the league is really going to suffer. So my sense is that they'll just scrap all the points. But we wait for confirmation on that.
I think that's a good place to finish it, mate. Thanks for your time, as always. We've touched a lot of bases here, a lot to cover. I'm very grateful you coming on and giving us all that insight.
You are welcome. Anytime, Corbs.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's show. Thanks again to Alex for coming on. Such good insight. A man who's truly in the know. Keep an eye on his Twitter as well, as he'll be posting more updates all week as this story will keep evolving, I'm sure, by the time this podcast comes out. But for all of you, thanks again for watching, listening. Reminder to keep favoriting, retweeting, sharing the content, telling your friends about it. The Scrum Down is going nowhere. More big guests to come. We'll see you again next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.